Sit down at any respectable cantina in any locally trafficked corner of Oaxaca, and they're going to drop a bowl of chapulines at your table. Crickets, really. Toasted and spiced crickets. So, what do? If you want that authentic Oaxacan experience in your home, go to mezcalforlife.com. Mezcalforlife.com offers two flavors of chapulines, spicy or lime and salt. And their chapulines come from 100% organic alfalfa farms, fresh and natural. When you can't make it to Oaxaca, mezcalforlife.com brings Oaxaca to you. And while you're shopping for that hopping protein, check their website for a complete selection of copitas, jicaras, and everything you need if you live for mezcal. mezcalforlife.com.
I am Chava Perivan.
And I'm Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning, critically acclaimed podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave spirits in rural Mexico. And we know that it helps them because we get smarter and smarter and smarter with the more agave spirits that we drink.
That is correct. When I first met Lou, he was not able to speak in Spanish or Arabic. And now that he has drank all these puntas and agave spirits, he can fluently speak all of these languages, right? Go, Lou. Do your pollos de la noche.
Well, at least Connie says that it's either I should be in jeopardy or that I'm in jeopardy. I'm not sure which one she's talking about, but I think it's I should be on jeopardy because I'm getting smarter.
Okay, so does that make any sense, Ryan? Medically speaking, has Lou become smarter because of his consumption of agave spirits?
I don't know. I meet a lot of people who want to tell me their ideas whenever they're drunk, and they're usually terrible ideas. So, or are you hearing him slurring his words, and it sounds like a foreign language? Could it be that?
Yeah, he was trying to hug everyone, and like, we'll get really close to your face. Yeah, all those symptoms. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about today is alcohol's effect specifically on the brain. And every time I'm on this show, I always have bad news for everyone about myths regarding alcohol as a healthy potion. So today we want to talk about specifically alcohol and its effects on the brain and what it can do as far as cognitive development as you go throughout your lifetime, as well as what it does to your sleep cycle.
I know. Like, this all sounds so ominous. I'm tempted to just tell you guys that I don't want to make this episode for my mental sake. But anyways, let's go, Ryan, please.
All right. So the last time you had me on the show, we talked about alcohol and longevity, which was the name of Raymond Pearl's book when he went around Baltimore and started interviewing families and asking about how much do people drink and at what age do they die. And that's what initially kicked off the myth that alcohol was healthy for you. Now, I'll say there is some truth to that myth. There is the EPIC trial, or the EPIC study, I should say, the EPIC study, which came out of Europe, that showed that a small amount of alcohol every day, so you're talking like half an ounce to an ounce, that did decrease death rates. But now we start looking at what is alcohol's effect on other parts of the body, not just did someone die or not, but can it affect other parts? And so you brought me on today because we wanted to talk about brain. So Lou and Chama, what are your questions about the brain and alcohol?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, my big question is I literally didn't start drinking alcohol until I was of legal age. I'm that
old. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
You're a unicorn.
I know.
That's Lou, the unicorn. Yeah.
All the parties in high school, I'd skip it. I didn't touch it. But as soon as it became legal for me to drink, I did. And I think it was a mistake to start then. You know, I've read a few papers. I'm afraid to say study because Ryan takes that word very seriously. Papers that suggest that the frontal lobe of the brain doesn't connect with the rest of the brain until you're somewhere between the ages of like 22 and 25. And I have this idea, and I don't know if it's because it's literally just an assumption I made or if I read it in one of these papers, that connection can be inhibited. The brain connections can be inhibited by drinking.
Yeah. So most of the world has the...
I can't believe that that actually has some reason. I was ready for you to say that was absolute nonsense.
No, that's actually true. So in most of the world, the legal age of drinking is 18 because the idea is you're an adult. You can now drink when you're 18, except in the United States. So Lou, you're correct. The prefrontal cortex does not finish developing until you're around 25, and drinking alcohol does inhibit that development. So we could make the legal age 25 here in the United States, but we decided to split the difference between 18 and 25, and we went with 21. And that's where...
which tells you that when you're splitting the difference, whoever was making that split had clearly had a lot of alcohol when they were 16.
Maybe so. So that's where the number came from, the legal age at 21. That's it. That's the whole reason, is because we're trying to keep people from drinking longer so that way they can develop their prefrontal cortex. That's it. That's... all it came
from. So in theory, we should wait until we're 26.
Yes, in theory, you should wait until your mid-20s to pick up your first drink of alcohol.
Really?
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm sure you're going to get to this, but I just want to throw it in there so that it's part of your explanation. So a friend of mine that is not myself started drinking maybe in his 13s, and probably he picked his drinking in his 15s. And then he has since then drank in a very moderate fashion. So what happens to the brain of that friend? Like, you don't have to answer right away. I would like to transfer that into the...
Yeah, so let's talk about, in general, people who drink a lot. All right, so there was the Whitehall 2 study that came out that looked at 9,000 people in England and followed them over the course of 17 years. And it followed them for a variety of factors, but one of them looked at dementia, and it found that people who drank particularly a large amount, so you're talking like what they called 14 units a week, so 14 drinks every week, had much higher rates of dementia. But they also found, crazy enough, people who decide to give up alcohol in their midlife, so people who abstain starting in midlife, also had higher rates of dementia. And that was just the data that they threw out, which of course leads to people to start speculating about why would someone who abstains from alcohol also get dementia. And one of the thoughts was kind of like what your friend did. It's they drink so much when they're younger, they realize they have a problem, and so they stop drinking in midlife. And then, but they've already done all the damage. And so just because you've abstained at the age of 50 doesn't mean that that's going to not come back to bite you later on. And then that's why they develop dementia at younger ages.
So you're saying that Chava's friend who stopped at 15 years old could still, if he drank enough from 13 to 15, he already did the damage. It's too late. You can't, once the oil's out of the engine, you can put oil back in, but you drove that car without the oil in it, that damage is always going to be there.
So maybe. So this was a study that looked at people who stopped drinking in midlife and never asked, did you stop drinking when you were a teenager?
Sure. But in theory, the damage, like you do the damage doesn't get undone.
Right.
And I think like the really important question there is like, what exactly are we calling damage? Like what is that damage that happens? Is it like connections? Is it actually like damaging the tissue of the brain? What is the damage you're creating?
Yeah. So as people age, your brain shrinks. And we can see this on a CAT scan or an MRI. And so we call it age-adjusted changes. And you see this in an 80-year-old versus a 50-year-old. Now, as someone gets dementia, or if someone has early onset dementia or has some other kind of cognitive impairment, we'll see that in an MRI or a CAT scan by having a much smaller brain. And so it's pretty interesting to see this when you actually look at an image. So if you want to just get on Google and look up CT scan brain dementia, you'll see the smaller brain images and how much space there is in the skull to accommodate for that smaller brain. So somebody did an entrepreneuring study following people. And so in the United Kingdom, there's something called Biobank, which is this really large, cohort study that follows 500,000 British people. And it's pretty involved. It involves questionnaires as far as like lifestyle. It involves things like blood, urine, and what?
Just a quick aside. Yeah. I just kind of love the fact that everybody's studying the brains of these people who live in the UK.
Yeah.
Because like that's the most interesting brain in the world. Anyway, sorry. Keep going, Ryan.
Well, a lot of that has to do with funding for research in the UK, as well as its NHS system that uses the same hospital system and the same electronic medical system for everyone. So it's a lot easier to do research in the UK than it is in most other countries, just for the setup of the medical system.
Gotcha. Anyway.
So in the UK, you've got Biobank, and Biobank follows 500,000 people, and it does genetic testing, and it does everything from bone density testing, but it also, for a lot of people, might also have imaging studies for their brains. So one study looked at 25,000 British people, and it paired their alcohol questionnaires with MRI images of the brain, and found that people who drink more have smaller brains. And that might be part of that, Chava, answering your question of, well, why does someone get dementia or cognitive impairment as they drink more? Part of it is because of the volume loss of the brain.
That is so freaking scary.
You know why he's scared, Ryan, is because he realizes I just have to wait him out. That's all I got to do is wait him out, because he drinks so much more than I do. Eventually, I'll become the smartest host of Agave Road Trip.
Jesus. No, but this is like, what I'm like struggling to grasp is, why is this not, maybe it's very common information that everybody knows but me that I try to ignore, but I have the impression that this is not as visible as it should be, and I have no idea. Like I'm a little bit scared now.
So maybe, you're maybe right. Like, what marketing has the public health sector done on educating the people about the dangers of alcohol?
Yeah, because usually, like the disclaimers are not as scary as the things you've been telling us in these last episodes, to be absolutely honest. Jesus. So it's basically you're shrinking your brain.
Yes.
I don't think it gets worse than that, but is there anything else? Like, is there any other? Oh, Lord, no.
He's going to tell you about your testicles now.
Well,
no, what do you think about that, Chava?
I don't know about that. But yeah, the same biobank. So looking at other MRI images, and so another study looked at 10,000 people looking at their alcohol questionnaires and then MRI images from around the body, not only found smaller brains, but also found larger hearts. And that's not a good thing, because these are overly muscular hearts that are trying to pump against high blood pressure. And it also found more instances of fatty liver. And so now you're on the spiral of, I'm going to get liver damage. And then as my liver starts scarring, it's going to go to cirrhosis. And then now I've got liver failure.
Yeah, but like, you know, still, that's not shrinking your brain. I mean, like, that's all the scary stuff we all know, right? Like blood pressure problems, cirrhosis. That's cool. Like, we've heard about it. But shrinking of the brain? Anyways, so the brain.
I'm really curious, with all of this bad news that you give us, Ryan, you call yourself Cocktail MD. You literally are an emergency room doctor. You know all of this, and yet you still drink cocktails.
Yeah. So but I also don't drink more than one cocktail now. So at this point, I just drink one.
A month?
At a time. So you don't want to binge drink. That's one of the more dangerous things, is binge drinking. Not just for health on your brain, but all the things that come along with binge drinking, like violence and traumatic death. That would be the big one.
And divorces and family drama. And soap operas are based on the notion of binge drinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But so you drink one cocktail a week? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If I have a night off and I'm going to drink it, if it's going to be maybe one cocktail and that's it, that's it for my whole day. And so, yeah, there are all these great things out there, and I'm sure I want to try them sometime. But unfortunately, that's the limit that I've imposed to myself. And we do this for all sorts of parts of our life. So I'm sure smoking is delightful for smokers, but I'm never going to pick up a cigarette because of the dangers that are inherent to it. Or riding a motorcycle without a helmet on. That, again, I'm sure it's thrilling riding a motorcycle at 80 miles an hour without a helmet on. But I've also seen what happens when people get into wrecks. And so it's just something that I'm never going to do.
Right, not even once a week.
Yeah, so, right. So there are things out there that I may enjoy, or I may think that I might enjoy should I pick them up, but I'm never going to do it because I know the downstream health effects of that.
Jeez.
So are you suggesting then that people shouldn't drink?
You know, people can drink. So we talked a few times about the about the whole alcohol longevity. But if you're going to drink, you have to drink in small amounts.
Moderation.
Yeah, and, so, and again, that term moderation, it's kind of, it means different things to different people. And yeah. So it really, for me, it'd be like, you should probably stick to 2 ounces or less if you're going to drink.
Jesus, and you know, like, I'm going to say something that it's going to sound, I guess, like if I'm trying to make a big deal out of it, but... Yeah, like if I were to lose my legs, that would definitely suck, right? My life will be changed for the worse for the rest of my life. But that I wouldn't be that sad about it. Like I will live like most people live in Mexico City, just sitting in their chairs all day. Like I don't know. Like, but if I
know exactly where he's headed with this one, and so do you, Ryan.
Yeah, but if I lose my mind, if I lose. If I lose my brain, that is who I am. That is the most significant part of what makes me a person. So I am endangering the most... Why are you whistling, Lou?
Nothing. Keep going.
Oh. Well, I am endangering the thing that makes me a human, basically. And when you say dementia, I'm guessing you're considering Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
You're considering a bunch of degenerative, horrifying things that are going to get you in a long, extended period of suffering. So it's not like you're going to die tomorrow. You're going to be 10 years in an asylum, like being taken care of and like not really have the humanity you were used to.
Yeah, so your brain essentially defines who you are, like your personality, your ability to think, your ability to experience things. That all comes from your brain. And so you're right. Things like telling people they're going to get dementia or telling people that they're going to have a stroke certainly gets their attention. And so if you tell them drinking high amounts of alcohol for a long period of time is the same as smoking for a long period of time, you're going to increase your rates of a lot of bad stuff down the road.
Jesus Christ. You know, on the bright side, Chava, if you do lose your mind, like, you're not going to care what the end of your life looks like. You'll be living in a fantasy land.
Well, nobody knows that for sure, though. Right, Ryan? Nobody knows exactly what happens inside the mind of somebody with Alzheimer's. Like, they don't know which is your level of perception.
Yeah, so I get to see both ends of the spectrum of dementia. So some are the happy, demented people who are just kind of laughing and jovial, but they really have no idea where they are or what they're doing. But I also see the other end of people who are scared and they come into the emergency room violent and attacking people because they have no idea who they are or where they are.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, I have to thank you, Ryan, because I think what you've just done is you've made all of my future trips with Chava so much easier for me.
What?
Sounds to me like you're going to be cutting back on how much you drink.
Significantly, yes. Yes, absolutely. But yeah. Come on, I say party sometimes, but I always wake up at 4 a.m. to get out to the next stop.
So 4 a.m., that leads me to a next transition here. So there's this there's this idea of a nightcap or drinking right before going to bed because alcohol is a sedative and will put people to sleep. And yeah, again, alcohol is a sedative, so it can make you sleepy. But the problem is that drinking alcohol before bedtime really delays your onset of sleep and then causes you to wake up more during sleep and then leads to, in turn, more daytime sleepiness. So alcohol disrupts your sleep cycle. And if you're waking up at 4 a.m., that's probably wise because you've thrown off your sleep cycle from the night before.
You know, what you're saying would be logical for anybody else, but really the thing that wakes up Chava at 4 a.m. is Lou Bang.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
we need to get to Jalisco by 6 a.m. Yeah, wake up, Chava.
I just like to be on the road in the middle of a beautiful place during sunrise because that's how you're going to get the beautiful pictures.
Well, which I agree. I fully agree with that. Just but still annoying.
Yeah, but I think that's a really important point. Is I tend to finish my drinking at about 11 a.m. or noon when we're traveling, because I don't like to have that feeling as I'm trying to go to sleep. But I think that's yet another thing to think about if you're drinking and if you're in the business of drinking. Right, yes. And you end your evening at two a.m., and then you have a drink after that. Like that's got to mess up your schedule, which is going to mess up your long term health.
Yeah, that's a real concern for bartenders or people who work in the industry, like brand ambassadors, for example, get called to a lot of parties and have to drink a lot. So, yeah, you're right, Lou. Drinking a lot, especially at nighttime, especially right when you're going to have to go to bed, causes its own set of problems in addition to all the other things that we've just discussed.
Yep. Well, this is going to be the last episode of our podcast. No one's going to want to listen Ryan, to us again.
I'm going to start calling this the horror, like the Horror Ryan Show.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back to podcasts.
Cholera. E. coli. Cardiovascular disease. Salmonella. Substance abuse.
It's the Horror Ryan Show.
Pollution, blindness, cancer, diabetes, cerebrovascular accident, anemia, bird flu, dysentery, drugs, aging, leprosy, breastfeeding, rabies, cloning, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, diarrhea.
Wait a minute. The call. It's coming from inside the bar. It's the Horror Ryan Show. Yeah, baby. I'm here to burst all your bubbles. Pop, pop.
Bad news with Cocktail MD.
There you go. Okay, well, this is good information to have, whether you act on it or not. And thank you, Ryan.
Oh, Lord. Thank you, Ryan. Really, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
It's I think this I want to stress how much I think this should be more available, more visible, even if it sucks, because I think we all should be more aware of what our decisions really mean for the long run. So thanks, Ryan. And thanks, Lou, for being part of this, whatever.
Okay, guys. Catch you next episode.
Adios, adios.
Goodbye.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.